This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got our buddy John Morosi joining us at 5:30 today, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. We are live at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Having spoken with Seahawks GM John Schneider a bit ago, that conversation will be available for you on the podcast page at seattlesports.com after the show. But he did break some news here that the Seahawks re-signed Drew Lock, so he was very, very excited about that. So you got your quarterback room, as you had last year, back intact this year. So good news on that front. And we talked about the signings yesterday, bringing Jaron Reed back, and they're talking to some linebackers we've heard about. So we'll see what they do out there. But some of the defensive help we've looked at in this draft, some of which initially with a guy like Jalen Carter, you thought, well, he's not going to be there at five. So, you know, why spend a lot of time talking about him? And he still may not be there. Maybe the Cardinals take him anyway, because that's, you know, looking at the mock drafts, once the Bears traded out of that spot, you know, Jalen Carter was very often in a lot of the mocks associated with them.
Yeah, and Arizona has kind of proven that they'll take chances on guys like that.
Maybe they will.
Kyler Murray wasn't the greatest, you know, personality out of college, right?
Yeah, not a lot of rave reviews about his leadership and team guy, and the many saying that he's a different kind of guy, and that he's might be more suited for baseball, which, you know, especially as a pitcher, which is what he was, he could be more individualistic.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And not, you know, you heard Beecham, his tackle. So, you know, talk about how he, you know, needs to mature and things like that and be a leader. But so, yeah, it kind of shapes up for if they don't. And maybe the new coach coming in there, that they want to get a new quarterback. We hope that for Arizona, because they're the pick ahead. But then the question becomes,
they got a lot of money committed to Kyler Murray. Yeah. I don't think they're taking a quarterback at three, but you never know. You know, but if he falls to five, with everything we've heard to this point, you know, again, we don't know what he's dealing with versus what is part of his character, his personality. We played the cut yesterday of I keep forgetting his name every time we go to it.
Oh, Jim Nagy.
Jim Nagy. I don't know why I can't get that name stuck in my head. But he talked about a pattern of behavior. He talked about things that there's things in the media that we all are talking about. There are things we don't know behind the scenes, and the teams know. So those kind of things were, for me, I was like, oh, hearing that just made me just a bit apprehensive. Again, if you're talking about number five, you can't miss. I mean, teams do, certainly, but you can't. I don't know that that's where you go, yeah, we've got some concerns, but we think it's worth the risk. If we're at 20, okay, I'm with you. You want to take a swing there? Maybe.
Well, I'm surprised that he didn't go, no, that's the case with every pick with John. But he kind of went the side of money.
Yeah, that's an $8 million swing between
it's
1 and 9 or right. 5 and 9, I think he said.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not just pride and, you know, oh, we screwed our team. It's money as well. So I thought that was kind of interesting to hear. Hadn't really thought about that. But I don't know. With what Moyer had to say, I think that brought some perspective. Like, we really don't – there are people that know exactly what has happened with Jalen Carter. And maybe this even started a year or two ago. Because maybe, you know, these guys are always looking at – they're scouting the guys that are going to be eligible for the draft. The SEC,
right.
Whoever the – which I'm curious. I was going to ask John this. Like, do you have, like, two scouts for the SEC?
I mean, because – so much to look at.
Yeah. But I'm sure that they know that kind of stuff as, you know, as the player is coming up, you know, to being draft eligible. And they've heard those stories from before. So – and, you know, it just – if you heard exactly what happened, I think it would be very interesting to put it out, you know, put it all out there and see how many people would say, hey, I don't care. He's a D tackle. You know, he doesn't have to be a leader. As long as he balls out, fine. And then there's going to be a lot of people that are on the side, maybe, of, you know, there's no way I would touch this guy.
Yeah.
He may not even play for you.
Well, Jordan Reed, who's a draft analyst for ESPN, talked about Carter's pro day raising some questions, but in his opinion, scouts still believe this is a top 10 pick.
Carter weighed in 9 pounds heavier than he was at the combine and elected to only participate in position drills. He started off explosive, showcasing his first-round talent, but he was unable to complete the drills due to cramping. That didn't stop one scout from telling me there's still no way he sees Carter falling outside of the top 10 picks. Carter, who was hoping to provide answers, left all 32 NFL teams who were in attendance with even more questions.
Well, the thing you're trying to get, the question you're trying to get answered is, does he really love the game? Mm-hmm. If he loves playing football, because there are guys that don't. They like being a football player, and that part of it's cool. But
yeah, the lifestyle, the money, everything that comes with it.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just such an unbelievable opportunity financially, in every way, to make your life better. And, you know, the fact that the guy can come off the ball and, you know, take a guard on and shed him and make a tackle, it's going to get him paid. And so, yeah, I wonder what's going on. Maybe he didn't have the greatest of advice coming up, and maybe not from you know, I would think that Georgia would put a lot of resources into that as far as team psychiatrists and people that you can talk to and things like that. But it's kind of interesting what Moyer had to say. Not kind of. It was very interesting. How, you know, as a human being, you get in fight or flight, and he's probably in flight mode right now. Like, he's a kid. You know, this happened. He probably feels bad about that, and to give him the benefit of the doubt. And maybe he just doesn't know how to react, so he's just like, you know, not even facing it and, you know, kind of shutting down.
Well, that's where I would hope his advisors, his agent, whoever he's got around him, would advise him in this situation. If they're seeing him and they're going, man, you haven't worked out in 2 weeks and you just don't seem right, let's, because he's going to do his individual workout. He's going to do his individual pro day. Let's skip this one. Let's schedule this for, you know, whatever, whenever, the end of this month, when everybody's doing them. Why not do, you know, that's what I would hope the people around him would do if they saw what was happening.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be interesting to see. And the question, you know, is if he's still there at 20, you know, do you take him? But to me, I mean, they're kind of the same. I mean, he's either a yes or a no. And if he's a no, then, because, I mean, if it's really bad and the things that you know about him, there's, you know, once he gets handed a bunch of money, he may not make it onto the field. Mm-hmm. You know, look at the guy, you know, Lefko, who was your guard there with Tennessee?
I think from Georgia also, Isaiah Wilson.
Oh, he was from Georgia.
Yeah,
is that what you said? Did he ever get on the field? I know he got sent to Miami.
Yeah, he was from Georgia too. Now, he played like one special teams play for the Titans and then never made it on the field in Miami.
That's amazing.
Well, and remember I talked about, you know, the SEC, and I remember Brock talking about it, how for those guys down there, I mean, you know, even ACC, I mean, big-time football down in the South and the Southeast, you know, that's kind of like making the NFL.
It's, yeah.
Like, that's the ultimate, and they're not maybe equipped to play in the NFL.
All right, coming up, we know linebacker is definitely an area of need. Just ask Dave Wyman. He'll tell you. Could the Seahawks find somebody in free agency to occupy that spot, or a couple of spots perhaps? We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Who is that?
I don't know. We had some guesses. There was not a consensus yesterday. It's not Soundgarden.
Are you sure?
No.
I mean, I defer to you on the rock and roll.
I'm trying to remember what somebody said. Grunt truck. What else did somebody say? There were like two or three guesses yesterday. If you know who that was, text it in. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. There were only like two or three guesses yesterday, and they were all different.
Yeah, I like that song, though.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
We got our buddy John Morosi coming up at 5:30, so make sure you tune in for that. We'll talk some baseball with him. But the linebacker spot, we just talked to John Schneider earlier in the program. That conversation will be available on the podcast page at seattlesports.com. He acknowledged that you're right. It's a position of need, Dave.
Well, what I said was it's the most important position on the field.
Agrees with you there. Yeah. But the first, you know, wave of free agency is gone. A lot of linebackers are gone as well. Your guy that you've been talking about, Drew Tranquil, is still out there. No sign as to whether they are interested. Haven't heard any rumors, whispers about a visit. Devin Bush supposedly paid a visit here today. Haven't heard anything about a signing. But that's a spot. It feels like that the linebacker spot, they need, first of all, it feels like they need multiple bodies. Now, who are the right ones in terms of the veterans? We've talked about Bobby Wagner. There's obviously the sentimental feeling about him and who he was while he was here. We asked Paul Moyer about him. Paul was pretty blunt and in saying, yeah, I don't think he's that guy anymore. And, you know, he's not that physical guy. You've got to have a guy that attacks. You got to have a guy that's physical. And he doesn't think that that's who Bobby is. And you know, that's not saying he wasn't brilliant while he was here and not the greatest linebacker in the history of the organization, but you're just talking about a different version of who he is. Now, maybe, and who knows what he wants? That's the other part. We have no idea financially what his expectations are. He is his own agent. So, you know, they've had conversations. I'm not sure where they're at financially in their mind with him versus where he's at. And maybe we see them go elsewhere. But if Drew Tranquil were to sign elsewhere, is there another guy out there that you look at and go, well, I'd be happy with this guy too? Or is it kind of Drew and then everybody else you feel like is kind of like, all right, they're just going to fill a spot?
Yeah, kind of. Although, you know, when you look at, like, if you're sitting in Washington and you're a Commanders fan, and you're like, Cody Barton.
Yeah.
Who is this guy? You know? And I, like John said, I feel like he has a chance to, he's playing the Mike linebacker, as mm-hmm. John mentioned, and, you know, he's got a chance to play behind two really good defensive tackles. I mean, yeah, he could end up being like a superstar. So I don't know. It means like the right decision. It's kind of interesting. I get the feeling that it's not going to be Drew Tranquil or anybody that we've been talking about. By the way, I'm looking at this the link that you sent that, you know, had all the remaining players and the ones that are
of the top 101 according to NFL.com.
Right. Now they left them ranked based on what's left over, but Draymond Jones was actually number 7 on that list before the Seahawks signed
him. It's Dre, Dave.
Yeah, just Dre.
Just Dre.
Well, still, the whole thing with Ken Walker, you know, whether it's Ken, Kenneth, I have to keep track of that. We'll have to get that right. But, yeah, so, I mean, it's I feel like it's not going to be any big splash, including Bobby Wagner. Because like Paul said, I mean, look, Bobby is a – who was it, by the way, that said, oh, it was Moyer that said, I don't want to sign Dick Buck because he's old.
Yeah.
But no, I feel the same way about Bobby. I think he's such a great player in the history of, you know, this franchise. But I think, you know, just I always say I was a little bit more of a battering ram, sometimes stuntman, more than I was a linebacker. But
human speed bump.
You kind of had, not that, hopefully not. But, yeah, I mean, you've got to, damn, Bob, that hurts.
Just throwing your body around all willy-nilly, just trying to stop the ball carrier in any way possible.
But, yeah, it's, I don't think Bobby's in that phase of his career, right? He doesn't want to go get hurt. He doesn't want to go and smash, you know, guards. And I mean, he can. He's a tough guy, and he hits. And like I said, with Rabel, I used to always say, when he hits you, you stay hit. I mean, he's very physical, but not anymore.
Yeah,
not anymore. That's not really his game right now. So I think that's kind of what they need.
Yeah, and it's I don't did anybody else on that list grab you as you went through there? I mean, it is
the remaining.
It is interesting to see, you know, how they did leave everybody with their ranking. So it kind of goes: here's number 3, here's number 6, here's number 20, here's number 27. There's, you know, because it's been picked. You're kind of it's kind of like shopping somewhere where they had a big sale and the shelves have been picked apart and you're looking to see is there a shirt left in my size?
Yeah,
you know.
Well, yeah, exactly.
There's all mediums left, Dave.
Always the mediums. Yeah, never the double.
But where's
XLs.
Medium?
Well, they need Thumb to start does. Getting more XLs and double XLs. We're getting bigger. Puna Ford is still.
He's like 31 or
he
something.
He was 31st,
right?
But now on this list that's remaining, he's like 8th or 9th. So
of the remaining guys,
yeah, and then Shaquille Griffin's on there, the next guy, then Jadeveon Clowney. So, yeah, it's pretty much picked, and not a lot of people, not a lot of support for Drew Tranquil. Although the guy who writes this says, "I love me some Drew Tranquil."
Yeah, was that Greg Cosell?
I think it was.
Is that who wrote it?
No, it was Greg Rosenthal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe that guy wants too much money. Maybe they feel like they're going to get something from within. I don't know. I don't know where they're going with linebacker. I'm hoping that all of this hand wringing over Jordan Brooks is for naught. That, you know, maybe he misses the first part of camp, but by the end of preseason, maybe he's good to go.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on that and keep you updated on the news that comes out. Meanwhile, he's been all over the WBC coverage. Our buddy John Morosi is going to join us next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
I've never heard a person walk out of the stadium and say, wow, I wish that game would have included more waiting.
He is an endless source of baseball and hockey knowledge.
Jose Berrios, el lanzador de Puerto Rico en el Clásico Mundial de Béisbol.
John Morosi, every week with Wyman and Bob.
You're being serious with me right now?
I love it. John Morosi is going to be with us momentarily. We are trying to track him down there. I think Lefkoe's trying to get him hooked up.
Like Schneider is coming off of some big, he's going to hit us with some blockbuster news.
Yeah, you never know. I don't know. He's in the thick of it. He's in his element, man. He loves the WBC stuff. He's down there in Arizona. So he's in the middle of all this. We'll get him on the line here momentarily. By the way, the mystery has been solved as to which song that was. I had somebody texting in saying, that's Audioslave. Same singer as Soundgarden. I'm like, well, I know who Audioslave is. I've seen him. I saw them multiple times. That's not. It does sound a bit like Chris Cornell. It's not. It's the band Shinedown.
Got it.
The song is called Heroes.
All right.
So mystery
solved.
Speaking
of heroes.
Speaking of heroes. Nice transition. Uh-huh. Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He's our hero, by God. John Morosi is with us. How are you, man?
Good evening. Phoning in from the Harry Ford beat there on Team Great Britain. You've got all the Harry Ford coverage you want coming right here with the Mariners' top catching prospect. What a delightful player to watch and a lot of fun to see him play for Great Britain there at the WBC.
Well, before we ask you about him and everything else going on, I got to get your reaction to what happened with Edwin Diaz last night. I mean, that was just – that was heartbreaking, John, to watch, especially the reaction of his brother who was out there sobbing and then seeing him, you know, wheeled off in a wheelchair. And now we get the news that he tore the patellar tendon and he's going to be out for the season. And then that makes, you know, opponents, I guess, if you want to deem them opponents of the WBC, it makes them feel righteous now, saying, see – you see what happens? This is what you risk when you send your guys out there to play in this game.
First of all, my heart breaks for him and for his family and for Puerto Rico because the Puerto Rican Federation and management and the players, they've invested so much in this tournament. They've reached the semifinal each of the last two times, and they're such a great and proud baseball nation. And so for me, my heart breaks for everybody that I know involved in Puerto Rican baseball. That's first and foremost, and certainly for Edwin and the Mets as well. At the same time, I don't see how this can or should affect the way that the tournament is run going forward or the likelihood or the wishes of players to participate. You know, to make a global point on this, how many times during the course of a year do we see an ebullient celebration after a walk-off win? You've got water being thrown and players running around the field and jerseys being torn off. In these moments, anything can happen. And both managers who spoke here in Miami today, Yadier Molina with Puerto Rico and Omar Lopez as well with Venezuela, said the same thing, that in many ways this was a freak incident. Terrible incident and a sad one, but I just cannot see from a logical standpoint how any organization could credibly say by virtue of this we are not going to allow our players to play in the future unless for every game they basically, if they win, then the players just go back to the clubhouse and put their heads down on their desks, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, walking single file.
Right. There's nothing. This is a human game. We are humans. We have fun playing and watching sport. This is life. This is what we do. And so while it is in its own small way, within the context of baseball, a pretty tragic event. Just one that just took your breath away, because it was such a joyful moment in the ballpark, and all of a sudden it's silent, and the gravity hit everybody very quickly. You could see the players' reaction. So I'm crestfallen for everybody involved, and my heart goes out to the Mets and their fans, because they have high hopes for the season. I get it. But we also talked recently, Joe Musgrove dropped a weight on his toe in the weight room. So are we going to ban weightlifting too? It doesn't make sense. Two things can be true. We can say this is a terrible thing that happened, and also in this particular circumstance, we can't legislate joy out of the sport. That makes no sense. And the other thing that I would say on this, to a global standpoint, is if anybody wishes to say that based on this incident that the tournament is no longer quote unquote safe, then are we going to have players walking out tomorrow? The answer is no, because this is no different in that respect than a regular season game, which, by the way, begins in 10 days. So I wouldn't understand why it would be okay to celebrate something in 10 days but not yesterday. So the logic doesn't really hold water for me that this will damage the tournament going forward. And if anything, I think you're seeing, whether it's Mike Trout, what he said last night, Mookie Betts, whether it's players like Kike Hernandez. I know Francisco Lindor spoke with Marley Rivera, my friend who works for ESPN. This tournament means so much to the players. It means so much to the players. MLB, it's a cornerstone of their marketing strategy. The players get prize money and they get paid. It's a big thing for MLB from a marketing and TV broadcasting standpoint. This advances the game, grows the game, and makes money. And when you add up all those elements, unfortunately, risk is part of the equation. And the final thing I'll say that speaks well to baseball in this is that if Edwin Diaz, God forbid, doesn't throw another pitch in his life, and I'm confident that he will, but he still gets the full amount that he signed for. Like from a player's perspective, he is guaranteed that money based on his contract. So don't forget how hard the players' union has fought for that. That deal's guaranteed. He's not at risk of losing his job.
Well, and the other thing too, JP, I think that there would be like an uprising with the players because they love it. I mean, it's amazing how, and I don't know about how this compares to years past, but every highlight you see, every game you watch, you can tell, man, the players, you know, they love playing in this classic, and I think you'd get a lot of guys protesting if their teams were to take that away.
Right. No, you're spot on. And listen, I'll say this. You know, I've talked to Mike Trout a couple of different times now during the course of the first round, and he has said, and I'm paraphrasing here, this is about the most fun he's had on a baseball field in his career. I mean, there have been other, obviously, there are things that are as fun that he's done, but he said this is right up there with the best things he's ever done.
Wow.
And that's coming from the face of the game in our country. And, oh, by the way, this is the other thing that I think is important to point out. Sort of in contrast to Diaz, who's already gotten his free agent money in November, Shohei Ohtani has everything on the line here. He could be staring at a $400 million deal or more, and he's in the last year of his contract. And what's he been doing? He's been playing. Not just one way. He's not been playing in bubble wrap, saying, well, I can only do three at-bats here, and I can only pitch this number of innings. He is a full participant. And early this morning, if for those of us that were waking up at 3 in the morning in Pacific time to watch this, he was there in front of 50,000 people at the Tokyo Dome, and as Matt Vasgersian pointed out today on MLB Network, literally half of the people in Japan watched that game. Half of the entire country watched the game. Okay, that's Super Bowl level, probably even more than that, ratings in our country. So that's how much this matters culturally and to the players. And I think that what we're seeing right now, to be honest, guys, is that more American fans and more American players are realizing what the Japanese players and the Japanese fans figured out right off the bat, which was that this is just magic. This tournament is magic. And is it perfect? No. And I acknowledge that. But it is as close to perfect in my mind as anything that we do in baseball. It is so good. And I tell you what, you look at the crowds, you know, I was just obviously in Phoenix, and I'm going to be in Miami for the conclusion here. The crowds are universally larger than they were the last time it was in Phoenix. They're more engaged. There are more American fans there, to where I thought the U.S.-Mexico crowd was like 50-50. And to be honest, when they were going through introductions, I was getting goosebumps because I felt like for the first time of watching this tournament that fans in a neutral city such as Phoenix, meaning not cheering for their hometown team, that when they introduced Mike Trout, he got a huge ovation. And Mookie Betts got a huge ovation. Ken Griffey Jr., by the way, Jr. still got a huge ovation on the coaching staff because we always know that about Jr. But it felt like for the first time that the greater American public is really starting to see why this tournament is so great, and the embrace of it on and off the field has been the best of any tournament that I've covered.
What happened to the Dominican Republic?
Great question. Their bats never got going. And like we talked about, it might have been the best lineup, or the best infield at least, that we'd ever seen constructed. And maybe, to your point earlier, the best lineup, period. We think about Julio and Soto, and they just never got things organized. I think their bats just didn't quite line up. They never really got their run production in order. I think that the supplemental offense, some of their catalysts, Devers had, I think, a relatively quiet tournament. I think he's a guy they were really looking towards. I think Julio was pretty good. I mean, maybe not the power, but he was at least on base. I just think they missed getting the big hits. And Puerto Rico, my gosh, they made great pitch after great pitch yesterday in something of a bullpen game. And that's why tournament baseball is so much fun. It's just you got to make the moves early. There's the desperation element to it. And I just think the Dominican, as star-laden as they were, they just missed the big hit. And it's going to be a really, really difficult time because the next WBC is 2026, so it's going to be a quick pivot, and there's already second guessing going on from managerial moves. It is like the World Cup. It is truly. I have always thought that, you know, in the World Cup, it's interesting in soccer where just because one ball bounces one way or somebody makes or misses a penalty, all of a sudden this coach is a genius, this person isn't. And in baseball, it's the same thing. It's, you know, people are getting questioned, and it's passion, and that's what I love about the tournament is the passion that you get, the characters that you see. Randy Arozarena for Team Mexico has been great. Harry Ford, the Mariners prospect for Great Britain, he is now, as you've seen, Sir Harry Ford, and truly a man of the Great Britain sports scene.
Who's the best Mariner that's participated in the WBC?
That's a great question. You know, I'm going to give you one name, and I think if I know Mike can probably check the tape on this. What did we say about how exciting it was that Eugenio Suarez was going to be playing for Team Venezuela, and that was going to get him going earlier than it did last year? What's happened? Look at his numbers. He's playing like an all-star again. And I really think that for him, being around these players, and the Venezuelan roster has come into this with a chip on their shoulder. They really did not play well each of the last two classics, didn't advance out of the group. There was always some just difficult issues of discordance from within the federation, the government, a lot of different threads there that weren't really lined up. And now they've gotten organized in a much better way. They've got a really good manager in Omar Lopez. And you can tell Suarez is enjoying being around David Peralta, Anthony Santander, Salvador Perez, Ronald Acuna Jr., Miguel Cabrera's on that team. And they are having fun. I think that team is dangerous for the U.S. to play. I mean, that to me, that game on Saturday night, Venezuela, when you consider the strong Venezuelan population here in Florida against Team USA in that ballpark, oh my goodness, my ears are going to be ringing for days afterward. I'm going to love it. And yes, I mean, for Harry Ford, he has become, in many ways, one of the faces of British baseball, to where, of course, both of his parents are from Great Britain. They were both born there, and Harry is just really embracing and representing the sport so well. And I had a great conversation with him. He's just a fantastic first-class person, mature beyond his years, and the notion of having a Cal Raleigh and Harry Ford tandem with the Mariners into the future has got to be pretty, pretty aspiring indeed there for the Seattle Mariners.
Is he a guy you think should break camp with the big club, or you think he's better served to get some at-bats at the minor league level for a bit?
He needs more work, I think, defensively. His bat is pretty close to major league ready. I don't know that he's quite ready to, especially in what's going to be a very freewheeling, base-running-centric sport right now with baseball, with the rule changes. I don't think he's ready to handle that part of the game yet at the major league level. But he'll get there because he's an athlete and he works. And he's super smart, very diligent, very good teammate, student of the game, everything that you want. I just think there's a reason why when catchers debut, they don't often debut at 20 years old. They need more time to get the nuances of the sport. And I think that the game is going to change so much right now that you want to have your veterans, whether it's Raleigh, Murphy, whoever it might be, behind the plate. And I think Harry Ford's time is going to come. It maybe it's at the end of this year, but I think he's more of an option 2024 and beyond once the defensive side of his game gets really, really sharpened up. And I think he's got a chance to be an all-star in the future.
JP, we had Greg Amsinger on the other day, and he said he'd been to like nine. What's that?
He's the best. He's my buddy. He's a great guy.
Well, he's second best in our book, but you being number one.
I appreciate that, guys. Yeah. Thank you.
But no, you know, he was really fired up about camp and spring training for the Mariners. He had been to nine different teams, but other than Jared Kelnick, what do you think's the most exciting thing that as a Mariner fan that has happened so far during spring training?
I think overall the depth of their lineup that we're seeing on a very consistent basis, I think is really, really encouraging. And it's not, and I think in a lot of ways, yes, maybe with Kelnick not being, or with Kelnick obviously being there and getting a lot of at-bats and J-Rod not being there, it's opened up a lot more opportunity for the overall depth of the group. But I just think that we're seeing that this team has, I think, a very, very strong foundation offensively. I think it's been good to see Murphy come back in and hit and show that he can catch again. I think that's been encouraging. And I think, too, I'll be really curious to see. I know that the offense has not been there for him at all. But is there an Evan White spot on this team at some point in time based on his defense? Is there a way that he can find a way to contribute to the future? But I just think in general, this team is really, really well balanced. And I think Gilbert's outing this week, very good. No walks, six punch outs. I think that was encouraging to see. Like we've talked about before, I think if Kirby and Gilbert come back and are healthy and can give you what they gave you last year in approximate form, this team's going to be back in the playoffs. I believe that those two guys are that pivotal. And as long as, you know, Gilbert having a solid outing to be able to get things going again, you know, Seawald, I think, has been sharp early, which not a lot of late inning relievers always are in spring. I think that's been really encouraging to see with Seawald's performances. So I think this spring, the health in general has been very good. And Kelnick obviously has been the star. And you add it all up. And I think that when I make my predictions, for better or worse, Mariner fans, I will probably have them in the playoffs.
Hey, John, I'm curious, just from, you know, you'd seen some spring training games before you got down there for the WBC.
Right.
How different does it feel now watching a game that doesn't have the new rules, that doesn't have the step off, the disengagement and the pitch clock and the bases and the whole thing? Was it noticeable to you?
It was 100% noticeable. And it feels, you know, like we're back at 2022. And that's, you know, in that respect, I really do like the new rules. I think it's a better game, better product, keeps things moving along. When we had, what was the final score, 18-8 or something like that between Canada and Great Britain, I was hoping for a pitch clock on that one. We didn't have it, obviously. We did have a mercy rule, but in general, yes, it is noticeable. I think the tempo of the spring games has been really good. And the time, I really like with this whole conversation that the data that MLB told us was going to be the case, that the games would be shorter, that we'd have more balls in play, that we'd have more run scoring, that you'd have more stolen bases, it's all been accurate. They did their homework on this, and they tested it and did it the right way, to where I don't know, and again, we talked about it before kind of in jest, you know, the different ways that we could potentially, you know, poke holes at the way the game is being played and what it could look like. I just think the players will eventually adjust to it and be quite comfortable with the way the game is played. And I think by the middle part of the year, we're going to end up with a better product that takes less time and is just much more enjoyable to watch.
JP, I know this is asking a lot from you, but did you fill out an NCAA basketball bracket? Because I feel like you pretty much do everything.
He's got no time for that. He's watching so much baseball.
But he always finds time.
Yeah, I would try to. I did not fill out a bracket this year. I haven't in a long time. I haven't done it. I do try to watch the games as much as I can. I know my sister-in-law, who's a proud Furman graduate, is thrilled today. I got a text from her. She's excited. So go Furman. Big win there over UVA. But the other ones, Princeton, I saw there was a big win there for the Tigers, which I was excited to see, representing the Ivy League so well. So there's some big wins there that I noted. You know, I'm kind of a root for the Big Ten, root for the underdog kind of a guy. That's kind of my general strategy, and I don't really fill out a bracket because, to your point, I've been watching two baseball games a day and trying to organize my rosters and who has how many pitches to throw. So the WBC is, in the best sense of the word, it is its own bubble. Like, once you step into this runs your life for like 2+ weeks, and it's beautiful. And then I will step out into the light and reacclimate myself to the world once it's over.
Hey, John, I wanted to ask you, I meant to ask you this a while ago, but what happened with Brian Reynolds? He's still with the Pirates, and he made it clear that he'd like to be elsewhere. So I don't know if he's disgruntled or if that's still something you see happening prior to the trade deadline, or what do you think?
That's a great question. It's kind of gone quiet there with Reynolds. He reported the camp, sort of said, you know, I said what I said in the off season. I'm paraphrasing here, but you know, he's here to play and putting it behind him as best he can. There's been at least some public talk about there being an effort to try to sign him. We'll see. I don't think that they are going to sign him necessarily, but I also don't think that they're imminently going to trade him either. So he knows that eventually the best thing for him to do is to play really well. Either it's going to help them trade him or help him get an extension or help him be a really highly coveted free agent when the time is right. But for now, there is no Reynolds trade imminent that I can tell. And in the meantime, and this was the big question, like we talked about this a lot, what are the chances that Kelnick makes some adjustments and has a monster start to the season and performs close to what Reynolds can do? And based on spring training, guys, I would say that's at least possible. And we shall revisit the Reynolds-Kelnick trade conversation, I'm sure, multiple times during the course of the season.
Yeah, Kelnick's been fun to watch. We're trying to contain our excitement with the qualifier. It's just spring training.
Yeah,
it's just spring training, but it's hard not to.
It's different for him, though.
Yeah, I think it is.
I think it's a good point. It is different for him because he also knows that spring training starts to mean more when you've got somebody who either A, made an adjustment, B, came back from injury, or C, is trying to win a job. And that's when you look at the numbers and say, okay, maybe there's something real. And also, let's remember, he's starting the games. So he's playing. I've always said, like, you got to be careful if you're looking at a double-A guy who comes in and gets all of his hits from the sixth inning on against other double-A pitchers. Well, that means he's going to be a good double-A hitter. That doesn't mean he's going to be a good major league hitter. And so if Kelnick is starting and playing against the major league guys and getting hit against the major league guys, that's what I look at. I look at who are you doing the damage against and what is the quality of your at-bat. And the quality of the at-bat for Kelnick has been very strong this spring.
John, as always, fantastic stuff. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk again next week. We'll be in Arizona. We'll be at spring training. Talk to you next week.
So when I left Arizona, so yesterday it was raining. It was a little strange. Ugh. But so they got their rain. They should be all good. And hopefully that means it's beautiful weather for you guys next week.
We appreciate
Thanks,
it, John.
JP.
Enjoy it, guys. All the best. Thank you.
There you go. John Morosi with us every single week. Always a fun conversation. If you missed any of that or any of today's show, you just find it on the podcast page at seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab and then click on our picture. And then what's the next step, Dave?
Subscribe.
That's right. Subscribe.
Bob. Dave wants to tell everybody that Bob just did an Elvis celebration, a Selly.
Okay? Oh, goodness.
That's your punishment.
You should be dark points for saying that.
I'm referring Selly to myself in the third person, and I'm using Selly.
Selly. Ugh.
Who do you think you are? Look at, you're up there doing this thing with Elvis. Jeez.
Just seeing the look on his face, Lefko, was priceless. Absolutely priceless.
Luckily, it's on the stream, so I saw it.
Oh. Thank God. We can all go back and watch that.
There you go. Go back and watch that.
All right. Our thanks to John Morosi. Coming up, our conversation with Seahawks GM John Schneider just jumps into the room, breaks news right out of the gate. Stay tuned for that. It is Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports on 710.